invite, I think it's April.
Yeah. Yes? It's April and some other teams are live. It's live already because, so what's going on here is it's just being recorded, and then the IT will go in and make the timings and put it on the website. Instead of doing a live recording, we thought it was easier that way. So it's not live, we're being recorded, and then we'll put it on.
So when does it actually go up?
It should go up tomorrow, well, Monday. It should go up pretty fast afterwards. So I just have to keep track of the meeting times. Yes, so the names are here if you want to read it.
Great. Welcome, April. We're here to discuss the agenda consultation, and I'd like to give you the floor.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm also supported by the anonymous Peter Clark, who I'm sure you all know. The slide deck is agenda paper one, if you have that. And what we'd like to do today is just give you a brief update on the ISB's 2015 agenda consultation, and then ask you some questions about how we prioritise our work and the effect of change on our stakeholders. And now if you look at, to go briefly through the slides, slide two, you remember we did a 2011 agenda consultation, and in that, as a result of that, we had quite a lot of good input from stakeholders. We had over 240 comment letters, we went to 80 outreach events. And as a result of that, the ISB decided, firstly, that they focused very much on the four major projects which were then on their agenda: revenue recognition, insurance, leases, and financial instruments. They'd also focus on the conceptual framework because people see that as being quite
fundamental
to IFRS.
Have left the conference.
So what you said. Was it something I said? we'd also focus on maintenance and implementation issues, including the post-implementation review. And the message that we got at that time was that our standard setting work should be much more evidence-based. So we thought about how we could have a sort of a research basis to our standard setting. And in the request for views on the agenda consultation this time, we've set out a methodology for evidence-informed research, how that should affect the research program itself, and how the research program should support all the technical activities. And we think that if we can make the standard-setting process itself more transparent, then we'll have a much clearer idea about the criteria and the priorities that we need to set for the work we do. We've tried to articulate how this all works in slide three. In a diagram. And on the left-hand side, which is where the issues come into us, agenda requests can come from a variety of sources. There's this agenda consultation and the one that we did in 2011. There's the IFRS Interpretations Committee. As you know, the Interpretation Committee receives submissions from stakeholders about issues that arise in implementing the standards. The post-implementation reviews will give rise, in some cases, to areas for further research. We completed two post-implementation reviews, one on operating segments and the other on business combinations. Operating segments, there's a narrow scope amendment to IFRS 8, which is in process at the moment. And there are two topics which have been taken onto the research agenda to do with goodwill and the definition of a business out of the other. Post-implementation review. We're planning to do four post-implementation review next year: consolidated financial statements, joint arrangements, disclosure of your investment in other entities, and fair value measurement. Now, there's a relatively low hurdle for getting to the next stage, which is the research projects. And in those projects, we assess the problem, we analyze it, and we test for possible solutions. There's a higher hurdle for getting something from research onto the standards level project, and that's indicated on the diagram by the grey line. Now, I think we've made it clear that not all research projects will necessarily result in a standards level project. And some of the factors that we consider when we're adding a project to the standard level program are the importance of the matter to investors and to other users of financial statements, the type of entities that are affected, and how pervasive or acute the matter is. And then the third leg of our activities are the maintenance of IFRS, And that's very often triggered by us being aware of an implementation issue. On slide four, what have we done since 2012? We've completed financial instruments and revenue recognition. We've almost completed leases, and we've made significant progress on insurance contracts and the conceptual framework. Now, it's fair to say that this has taken longer, I suppose, than we expected in 2011. As a global standard setter, outreach and consultation have a particular relevance to us. We have to test our proposals against a wide range of different ways of doing business, different legal frameworks, different regulatory frameworks. And we also need a rigorous due process to ensure the quality of our work. So that takes time. There's also the resource issue, and it's not principally the resources of the board time or the staff. We're aware that there are constraints on the ability of our stakeholders to actually to deal with change. We also had a disclosure forum in 2013, and in the 2011 agenda consultation, we also heard that we should have some sort of disclosure framework, and that was originally proposed to be part of the conceptual framework. On slide five, you'll see what we now have, which is the disclosure initiative, which is a very major part of our activities now. And it's a cross-cutting range of different types of projects. We've completed a narrow scope amendment to IS1, which just gives some guidance there about subtotals and materiality. We're looking at digital reporting. We've got some implementation projects. We've just published an amendment to IS7, which will now require a debt reconciliation, which will highlight things like non-cash flow items. And we're looking also at research projects like the principles of disclosure and a standards review of disclosure. Slide six, we've also got a project on primary financial statements. Now, when we did the 2011 agenda consultation, everyone's top topic was performance reporting. It wasn't just investors, it was every sort of sector of our stakeholders. We were originally going to address that as part of the conceptual framework. We did address OCI in the conceptual framework. But we now have a new project where we're going to examine the purpose and the structure and the content of the profit and loss, the balance sheet, the cash flow, and the statement of movement on equity. We're just at the stage of scoping that out, really, and setting that up. So the initial approach will include things like reviewing the old financial statement presentation project, where you remember there was a theme of integration between all of the different primary statements. We're looking at the UK FRC's work in this area. We're also monitoring the FASB's work on it. And we're also going to look at just how entities themselves report their performance. And are there any gaps in the existing requirements? There'll be some time needed to assess this, and we'll be coming back to the ISB with a plan about this in due course. So, the 2015 agenda consultation itself, we're only asking questions about the composition, balance, and priority of the projects in the ISB's work plan as part of this request reviews. There's a clear link between the 2015 agenda consultation and the trustees' review of the structure and effectiveness of the ISB. That's being done now as well, and you'll hear from Yale about that later today. But because they are interlinked, they've both been out for comment for the same sort of time period. The request for views and the agenda consultation ends on the 31st of December, and the trustees review on the 30th of November. Slide eight, we're also particularly seeking investors' views on the agenda, obviously. We've got an online survey, which is targeted at investors, although anyone can actually complete it. We ask in that survey two top-level questions which come from the trustees' review on the role of the ISB in wider corporate reporting and the effect of the changes of technology on IFRS. And then we have a number of questions on what our priorities should be. So firstly, we ask, people to nominate the top three topics that they think the ISB needs to address, whether it's on the research agenda or not. And then we ask individual questions about each of the current research topics to ask whether the respondent thinks it's a high, medium, low project, or whether they don't have a view. So that's a bit of background about the agenda consultation 2015. Do you have any questions, or shall we go to hear your views?
Is it still appropriate for the people around the table and on the call to enter the survey, apart from the comments here? Or?
Yeah, by all means, we're asking please to send us a comment letter, which you can do online, or complete the survey online. Comment letters will be open until the end of December. The survey is open until mid-December. And obviously, the more input we get from investors, the better quality our responses will be.
I think I have done the survey, but I'm not sure. If I do it again, will it show up? You have already done it or not?
I'll let you do it more than once from the same computer. So hopefully, that's probably
so
should be said.
No, I want to contribute, but not twice.
Have you put your name in the survey?
Yeah.
Okay, then we can see if we've received it.
Okay.
Right, so our first question to you today is about our research projects and which ones you think we need to prioritise. And I suppose we're particularly interested in which areas do you think are particularly relevant to IFRS. In both the request for views and the surveys, we've asked what priorities people would give the individual projects. So if we could look at slide 11. That's our research program as it is. Rather than going through project by project, it might be easier if each of you just speaks about which you think is the top priority area that the ISB should address. Have you got top favorites? Just to give you an indication, perhaps, just for a little bit of background information, we've not very scientifically, but very informally, we've spoken to different groups. Our advisory council, who met earlier this week, their top favorite was goodwill, because they think the impairment model doesn't provide useful information. Second favorite was disclosure principles, because that is far-reaching through each project we do. Business combinations under common control and primary financial statements were also interesting. I think the last time we looked at the survey, primary financial statements was the top favorite. Disclosure principles, which is obviously of interest. Goodwill got a lot of support.
Where?
In the survey, the online survey at the moment.
Okay.
So that's just to give you some indication. Other areas that people think are important are financial instruments with the characteristic of equity, because obviously it's fundamentally different whether a balance is shown in equity or as liabilities. So, do you have any views?
I see Peter.
Thank you, Martin. Yeah, definitely, I agree with the others that goodwill is the issue. And if we leave the amortization question alone, definitely the separation into other intangibles versus goodwill is a big issue. And in Sweden, at least, income taxes is an issue. And in particular, deferred tax assets. That is a problematic area.
Why is that the case?
They don't account for deferred tax assets. So instead, no one, they want to be prudent. So instead, it will show up as a lower tax rate in the future. And that actually is so much more, it complicates my estimates tremendously, the companies that don't show deferred tax assets. And they are many. Then also, provisions for restructurings is a constant trouble. Not only the provision in itself, but the way it is released kind of into profit again is a problem. And then discontinued operations. If you present discontinued operations, normally it's not valid. It happens, it's valid, but normally it's not. And you can have discontinued operations staying as a discontinued operation for at least 2, sometimes I've seen 3 years. And then the amounts are too small, and sometimes they have a gain from another disposal of shares or something, and all of a sudden they use discontinued operations. And I think the problem is that if we would focus on that it must have been presented as a segment, then a lot of the problems would disappear, actually, the ones that I come across. Financial instruments with characteristics of equity, where they are, it is a problem. But in Sweden, not that many. Maybe 5% or so of the companies that I go through in my investigations are in this, have this problem. But those who have a problem. They are difficult to understand what they are doing. It's all from preference share to convertible instruments of some sort, and so on. And that, those are my top priorities.
Could I ask some questions about some of those? For goodwill, is your concern that too many intangibles are being separated, or was it something else?
I mean, everything with goodwill is just strange. I mean, if you present an item that you call other intangible and amortize on it for a number of years, and you ask the chief accountant, how have you put this together? And he says, I can honestly not tell you. Because we this is something that we need to do. And so we have consulted with our auditors, and they have consulted with consultants that are professionals on intangibles. So this is the number that we have come up with. And normally it is, as an average, 20-25% of the total amount. The rest is goodwill. But it's arbitrary. No one can really say what it is. And it's labeled customer lists, customer something. I think it's ridiculous.
So that's a polite way of putting it.
Well, if you put in an asset, at least you must be able to tell us what it is, not refer to consultants and it's normal practice and so on. I don't buy that. So that is a problem. Then I can talk for hours about goodwill amortization, but I will not do that at the moment.
Okay.
Sorry, I had a couple of questions as well. The provisions for restructuring, I didn't quite get what the issue was there.
Is it earnings management?
Yeah, I would call it earnings management. I mean, you get the new CEO, he comes into the picture, he do a large offset to a restructuring reserve, and then later on in the footnote you can see they are taking it back, in some of it taking it back. I have seen provisions for restructuring last for like 4 or 5 years, for example. So most of them are uncomplicated. You take them within a quarter or two, you put them back, so to speak, into the income statement. But let's say 10-15% of the provisions, I think, are, they are not in line with the IFRS, at least. So I think the standard might be, well, give the companies too much leeway in this respect.
And then on liabilities versus equity, do you have a concern that too much is classified as liability or too much as equity or lack of disclosure or?
I think the major problem is that sometimes it's more of a liability, sometimes it's more equity. But whether you present it in equity, like we have now in the real estate companies, a lot of preference shares, eternal preference shares with a fixed dividend in eternal, they put that in as equity. Yes, you might call it equity, but again, to me, it's more like a liability when I calculate earnings per share, for example. So it's quite obvious that I want a separate line called hybrid capital or something, so it will show me that this is something that you not easily can classify it either as liability or equity.
So it's more transparency related?
Yes, it's a transparency related issue.
Paul, please.
So what are the three priorities for the agenda is the question to reframe it, and to my mind that's performance reporting and you know, it's what investors said last time around, which is a little while ago, and as April, as you said, it was everybody's response, and you know, it's the fundamental issue, and frankly, if you cleared all your time and just looked at that and got that done over the next period, I think everybody would be delighted. And it would remove, I think, a lot of the challenges and concerns around issues like fair value, I think, could be addressed with the performance reporting approach. So to talk about the narrow question of the research program, essentially do whatever you need to do in order to get that bit done, which perhaps means the principles of disclosure, perhaps means the primary financial statements, and don't spend too much time on other stuff that might distract and you know, hit that limited resource that you talked about, both internally and externally.
So this might be related to the performance reporting, but we are very interested in primary financial statements in terms of performance reporting, such as the definition of net income OCI, and also the OCI recycling, and as well as the global introduction of operating profits, and also I believe that principles of disclosure is a very important project, because the disclosure initiative is, as David said, a cross-cutting project, and the principle of disclosure should provide the base for all disclosures. So we rather believe that the principle of disclosure should be completed before other
project related projects.
Thank you.
Oh, yes. Okay. Thank you.
I have
some suggestions myself as well. I really like Paul's call for performance reporting. But there's been some work done by ESMA as well on non-GAAP measures. And if you look at the financial statements, there's a lot of information in there, which is actually non-GAAP. ESMA's requirements actually put some rigor to all the non-GAAP measures. And I just wonder, what is the scope for the ISB to enhance the rigor of anything else reported within the financial statements by maybe including similar requirements that ESMA put down there on non-GAAP measures. It's not the purpose of making everything GAAP, but a way to increase the rigor of all the other elements in the financial statements through such a requirement to make transparent what the differences are. I think that would somehow add to the credibility of the financial statement as a whole. In Europe, that's solved maybe by ESMA, but okay, maybe the ISB can expand that for the rest of the globe.
Just on that, in our principles of disclosure discussion paper, we're going to have a discussion about what we should do about so-called non-GAAP information that would propose introducing, not prohibiting them, but introducing some principles about fair presentation along those lines. I think Kelly got on that would be very helpful. We hope to publish that Q1 next year.
Good. Another point is that if you look at what really causes trouble in the life of an analyst, it's mergers and acquisitions. And I think the financial statements could be more helpful in helping analysts getting to the point where they can actually start to analyze. If a company makes an acquisition throughout the year, the key element there is the consummation date. So the acquisition is consummated as of that moment in time. Whereas as an analyst, your focus is on full year performance and not 6 months of a acquisition. And this actually causes a lot of work for many analysts, and the work is all the same. How do we get latest 12 months pro forma performance? This has nothing to do with the balance sheet. The balance sheet is just is like the photo, which already it's really the income statement and cash flow. So what could the standards prescribe or describe? How to execute a pro forma analysis? Because there are no rules for that. You fully depend on how companies make their own guess on how to come up with a pro forma, which basically results in that you have to do your own work from scratch. And it's a lot of work. It would make the life of an analyst much easier if there were some guidance or even a standard on how to get to a pro forma of the income statement, especially. That said, I mean, that's like the existing acquisitions in the current year. I think there is also scope for improvement how companies report on their past acquisitions. And you can say that's part of the goodwill discussion. Yeah, but somehow I get the feel if you are for the goodwill discussion, you're for amortization, because that's why you would. I think there are reasons to be for the goodwill discussion to make it more useful information. And so I'm also in favor of addressing goodwill to better highlight to what transactions the goodwill on the balance sheets actually relate. Because we don't know. We just see this one amount and we don't even know to what it is, what it consists of. And if there is scope for making life easier and more when to make an impairment, it's maybe by formulating by management when you execute a transaction that you require them to formulate either internally what the key projections were, and that you subsequently compare and contrast what the execution is. And if you fail on those, if you come short of your own projections that were the basis of the valuation, you take the pro rata goodwill impairment. Nothing to do with discount rates anymore. These were your main projections, and you fell X amount short. Maybe there's a shortcut there to get rid of, okay, no way we got our projections, but the discount rate changed, you know? So we don't need to do a goodwill impairment. Maybe there's a shortcut there. So I'd like to see more information how past acquisitions actually fared. Maybe one way is to split and break down the goodwill. And that's actually for now my key points.
Yeah. My favorite subject would be a little bit different from other CMAC members. My favorite would be segment reporting. I think segment reporting is the core information for analysts. It's where you understand businesses. It's not about figures, it's about business. So you need to have real information, and I think there are some current weaknesses in the ASC standard. First, we can see companies reporting segments which are not real businesses, to be honest. they are presented as business, but there are no listed company in the universe that are making this business. So how can you report that? It's a little bit strange. So I would like to have some let's say basic rules to define what is a segment, more solid than the existing one. The second thing is we definitely need reconciliation at segment level if you introduce management view. I mean, it's necessary. Remember that IFRS are supposed to bring comparability. And if we introduce management view, we need to have comparability. I mean, we cannot escape that. I mean, this is very important. And segment information is used to make comparison. And if we cannot, I mean, we remove this key feature of segment reporting. It doesn't need to rewrite the whole standard, but I think it's fixable, I would say. We can really improve the value for investors, really. And that's, once again, a key information, if not the most important. Then I would agree that goodwill is a key subject. I won't come back on the debate versus monetization. I'm very much in favor of monetization. I think also the current information we've got with the model is useless. I've never seen an analyst looking at an impairment test because we don't have all the assumptions. So how can we use it? I think it's really useless. I would agree also on the tax because for me I have so many surprises with tax and different taxes that even spending hours at looking at the footnotes, it's a source of frustration. And I think also there might be some simple solution to improve the standards. I will give you a basic example. Once I was surprised to see a European company recording another time a big deferred tax asset. So I asked the CFO, you had some big operating loss, some carry forwards, you make the compensation, future profit. By the way, how many years of compensation have you done? And she told me, 15. And there are recorded about 1 billion euro of deferred taxes. It was completely fake. And so this kind of information, how many years of compensation have you done for the creation of your deferred tax position, is something very basic and will give you a good indication of about the real value of something. So I think here also we have some improvements with some slight changes. And I agree also with Peter on IFRS 5. Playing with IFRS 5 is sometimes a nightmare. I mean, no more depreciation on the assets gives stupid figures at the bottom line. We don't know exactly what is the cash which is transferred during the transaction. I mean, we've got a lot of problems to assess what will happen exactly with the discontinued activity. And I think this is it.
Okay, thank you, Sharon. Peter, you were...
A quick comment about performance reporting. I think if we go into performance reporting again, I think it's necessary to go beyond this general level that we normally talk about and go into a sector-specific discussion, like insurance companies, banks, real estate companies, construction companies, are some of the sectors that I think actually qualify for being discussed separately. A general model, I don't think it's fruitful to discuss the kind of IS1 revision that we did 5-7 years ago or when it was. So more, in that case, a sector-oriented approach on performance reporting.
That's a big change.
Not really, because you have the IAS 40, and that's a sector-specific accounting standard, the investment property standard. And you have agriculture, and that's also a very sector-specific standard. So I don't think it's that big change if you compare to IAS 40 and 41.
How how many different industries do you think we would need to identify? Is it five?
that's something that we can discuss. I mentioned four that I feel don't fit into the same kind of model. But then I can take like a consultancy company and have the same model as an industrial company, for example. But construction companies, property companies, insurance, and banks.
And the conglomerate.
No, I mean, I don't want to get into that discussion now, but four major areas I can see. But maybe there are some more.
Okay, Mark, please.
Thank you. I guess we've got goodwill for an hour and 25 minutes, so I'm going to stay clear on that one for a minute. I like Jack's comment about segment. I think segment is where I spend a lot of time. Unfortunately, a lot of the companies I look at the moment, I don't get any balance sheet information, and I'm interested in the returns of the businesses that I'm looking at, and so I'm interested in improved disclosure on the returns in the segments, so therefore more information around the balance sheet of the segments to me would be an area that I would love to see more of. The second thing that we, again, Jack mentioned income tax. It's the biggest expense on many income statements, and many businesses are getting rates well below the statutory rates. When I'm looking at the value of a business as the cash it's throwing off in the future, I'm interested in what is the sustainable tax rate. And at the moment, there's a lot of information in there, but a lot of it doesn't actually help me to understand what is a sustainable rate. Now, if I look at the OECD initiative that's coming out at the moment, or that's been in the news recently, I can see the tax is going to be a news item in the future, and I would think that the IASB would want to be part of the discussion. So aligning the time horizon for the income tax work with that might be interesting. And the other one in terms of timing issues, we're looking at the conceptual framework, and I think the provisions, contingent liabilities and contingent assets would tie in quite nicely with the conceptual framework. So I think in terms of timing, again, that might be an interesting one to look at the agenda.
Yeah, is it worth just mentioning briefly the proposals that the board is about begin balloting on IFRS 8? We did a post-implementation review of IFRS 8, and as a result of that, the board are proposing to make a few small improvements to IFRS 8. One of them, which
this
I think...
This is segments, by the way, we're talking about.
Sorry, operating segments, yes. One of them is quite simple. When the board originally decided to go for the management perspective, one of the reasons they did that was because they felt that it would tie all of the information together so that the management commentary and the presentation to investors and the operating segments in the financial statements would all be identical. So they're just reiterating that again, and that we think will help people because at the moment, for example, regulators and investors are concerned when you have a management commentary which talks about business A, B, and C, and you have financial segments, which are P, Q, and R. We're also inserting a bit of guidance about who the chief operating decision maker is, because that's a fundamental point about deciding what your operating segments are, and we're also asking that the chief operating decision maker be disclosed so that people know how you actually manage the business in practice. On the information, the balance sheet lines, we had a lot of feedback that investors wanted specific lines to be mandated so that a number of lines would be mandated. We couldn't actually, however, agree what those lines were, because if you were in the construction industry, it was one thing. If you were in banking, it was another. And so we thought, rather than mandating 75 lines, we've put in some discussion about why investors are interested in particular elements and what the characteristics are of that information so that people have a better idea of what information is useful to investors. On the subject of the reconciliations being done segment by segment, at the moment you are required to allocate the reconciling items over the segment information as much as possible, but there are some things which aren't allocated. They may be things like foreign exchange, or it could be things like goodwill, other things like that. Now, when we discussed this, there were two views. One was that if you allocated those things on a random basis or on a meaningless basis, it would actually reduce the quality of the segment information itself. And so in the end, we decided that we wouldn't actually mandate that everything had to be allocated segment by segment. Instead, we said that they should be fully explained so that people themselves could decide what segment and what area of the business they thought those reconciling items would affect. So that amendment is in process.
Okay. Carlos.
Yes, so a few topics. First, I think someone mentioned about non-GAAP information. And for me, one of the most important market moving information nowadays, it's sales. And usually companies, they disclose non-GAAP sales evolution because they need to tell how much is local currency, how much is affected by acquisitions. Sometimes in a retail company, they talk about same store sales. So, and from interacting with companies, you see that, you know, they may measure these things differently. So they may hide, you know, their, you know, performance. They may measure their performance different ways. So that's very important. That's non-GAAP, and obviously there are other things non-GAAP that are also important. But this is one of the most important information I see in its market moving. The other topic is post-employment benefits, and it's a bit annoying for me that IFRS gives me a number, and when you talk about, when we talk to companies about reality, the number is totally different. So it would be nice if we could at least have some sort of a bridge between, you know, the actual regulatory pension position of companies in IFRS. And I know there are many different options, and we may have buyout valuations, and we have, you know, the regulatory valuation of the plans, but sometimes the gap is huge. And it's relevant. And the third topic, I don't need to get into details, is income taxes. It's very hard to get a proper analysis of income taxes in general.
Could I just ask on the pension one? You said there's a difference between the number required by the standard and the real number. Do you mean what you think is the real number, or what the company thinks is the real number?
Usually, what the company thinks is the real number, because, you know, I have no idea. But usually, you know, if you have a multinational company, you have several different plans, and I understand why it may be interesting to have one single measure for IFRS. On the other hand, reality is based on each one of the jurisdictions, you know, UK, Netherlands, US, whatever, right? And they may have different results. The cash demands will be based on those negotiations, right? And therefore, you know, the cash demands may be totally different than IFRS number. So the problem here is that sometimes, even for different jurisdictions, you may have several different numbers, because you may talk about buyout valuations, sure. And sometimes, you know, knowing the buyout valuation, it's an interesting information.
Sure.
And, you know, it's most companies wouldn't talk about it, and sometimes it's small, it doesn't matter, but sometimes it's very important.
Okay. Thank you, Carlos. I'm going to give Peter the word, but if there are any other comments people would like to make, I really recommend to do it via the survey, because April's presentation actually is more than just this element, so I'd like to give
Peter the last opportunity to discuss this subject.
Oh, well, seeing as a lot of people have come before me, I can only echo, I would think some of the comments made. I think non-GAAP performance metrics are a big topic. And I welcome the thought that we will formalize that a little bit more, because these things, separating organic growth from inorganic growth is a big challenge for analysts, and companies present the information that they want. And a lot of times people run with that information. So getting insights into how they get to their non-GAAP metrics, I think, will be key. That relates, of course, also to the importance of M&A. We've seen M&A importance grow again. And it's interesting because that's an area where evidence-based standard setting could kick in, because there's a lot of academic work being done on how impairments come about. And we can look at anecdotal evidence, but it's interesting to see that across markets you could see how impairments come about. And I think some of that information could help setting standards. Finally, I would echo this notion of segment information. Segment information is unfortunately not complete enough, and going to the points made by April, if you think about it, at the very minimum, we should have enough information to compute basic ratios, if you wish, like a return on invested capital, a net operating margin, an asset. I mean, very basic, and that is, as Mark pointed out, that is often lacking. Every analysis starts with the components, and we get to the main thing. So I think those topics are the ones that I would put on.
Okay, thank you. Tanya, is there anything you would like to add to this?
No, I think pretty well everything's been covered. I mean, I certainly echo the issue about M&A. I think goodwill, and I think in particular, goodwill when it goes on the balance sheet and understanding what sort of returns you're getting on that goodwill. I certainly echo the segment element of the discussion. The one thing that sort of wasn't discussed, we've obviously got a lot of things on that list, and I think one of the speakers was just talking about let's prioritise and make sure that if a couple of these elements are selected, that we work through them. I suppose leases comes to mind where it's been on the agenda, there's been a lot of things going on, and so something drags out for a long period of time, which does create then a lot more uncertainty around the actual accounting standard. So the only thing I would sort of put forward is not just what is important, but if we're thinking about having sort of this research agenda that we that essentially there is only maybe two or three items really focused on at any one time, worked through to conclusion before anything else comes onto that research agenda.
Thank you, Tanya. April?
Well, that actually leads into the second question for today, and that's on the balance of our activities and priorities on slide 12. We've got the major projects program, we've got the research topics and the maintenance and implementation projects. And one of the things we're asking about is have we got that balance right? The interpretations committee, as you know, look at implementation issues as they arise. Since the last agenda consultation, we've issued 15 annual improvements, neuroscope amendments or interpretations, and they affected 21 of our standards. We've also issued 54 agenda rejections by the IFRIC, which is where they say that they aren't going to look at a topic because it's already clear and they give the reasons why it's clear. So the question for you today on slide 13 is, have we got the balance right between major projects and narrow scope amendments? And also, how much are you affected by change? Some people say we should stop tinkering with the topics, just focus on doing one or two big projects and getting them done. Other people say, yes, but you've got to address my problem, and my problem is urgent. So we're trying to get the focus of that. And one of the things that we've asked people is when they say what the priority is, if they can give us reasons that they think it should be a priority. When we did the 2011 agenda consultation, we tried to think of some sort of matrix that we could score the projects by. You know, if it affected a lot of companies, it would get so many points. If it affected the companies really fundamentally, it would get so many points. we couldn't quite get that to work. This time we've been thinking about, is it something which will sort of strengthen the relevance of IFRS? So that would be something like the disclosure initiative, or does it fill a gap like regulator does, or whether it improves consistency, which was one of the reasons for the revenue recognition project. So I suppose I'm just asking you, are you affected by change? Do you think we've got the level of change right? Do you think we're not doing enough? We're doing too much?
I'll throw in something on this. It depends on
Robert, you should.
Yeah, other words.
Oh. I can't hear you, Robert.
Oh, you can't hear
you. To the question of, it's interesting how you said that about how we are affected. It's easier for analysts to deal with change than it is with public preparers. But I'm also conscious of the CMAQ members. If you load up the agenda with twice as much work, we just end up having to read twice as much. So I think impact. I think there's a finite amount of impact the system or change the system can swallow. And I think when the introduction, the comment was that it's not just the ISB. It's how to get the stakeholders. I'll throw one out with my favorite subject, the extractive industries. The answer on that, and I'm not suggesting we throw it back on the agenda, but the answer on that one is I think people just haven't gotten their heads around the answer that the staff sort of wanted. And I think it sometimes takes time for the stakeholders to realize that that's the right answer. So I like the idea of a grid. I think you should be focusing on quality, not quantity. And ultimately, it's an issue about it's hard for regulated, really important for Canada. I'm not sure it's important for the rest of the world. Extractive industries makes a lot of sense, but the answer is a current value, but nobody's ready for it. I actually give you, do the grid, explain it, and just go forward. Do quality. This is how that would be the input. Okay. Peter.
I can tell you, unless it affects the face of the income statement and the balance sheets, I will probably not discover the change. The narrow scope amendments or improvements, I cannot really tell what they are. Sometimes I try to go through them because people ask me to, and I can say, well, it looks like you have done changes, but I cannot really see anything in the figures. But if you have issued a new standard or issue a change, like when companies switch from the equity method and proportionate consolidation over to the equity method, that I could spot very clearly in some of the companies. So unless you have a change in the previous year, very difficult to spot changes. Then, of course, when you introduce the OCI, that was very easy to spot and so on. But it's that kind of change that I can spot. The small ones will pass me by without notice.
Okay. Also, we have 5 minutes left, so please, Osman.
I just need one. So I think the question about the balance of your work change, I think helpful, I think, is the approach that you took since the last agenda consultation. The way that I see it is that you're trying to do the filtering process as to what gets into a kind of a consultation to a change in accounting earlier, and you're starting to kind of reject certain things rather than doing an exposure draft or a discussion paper and then seeking comments on it. I feel that this research project phase is starting to bear fruit and is very helpful. I was going to make the same point that Peter just made in terms of the kind of big changes what the analysts that I kind of work with are focused on, and the narrow scope is of less interest. So I would say the balance of your work is, the pace of change seems to be still quite high, but it's improving because of this this research phase and that filter being applied more and more. I think that should continue.
What I would like to have is a bucket of changes presented every third year or so. I don't like the statements being changed every year and the previous year being changed because of new standards. So I prefer to have it every third or fourth year or so.
Okay,
sorry.
I'm calling myself now. If you look at the large standard projects, I mean, there's also a risk there because the large projects tend to consume an ever-increasing amount of time. And maybe there is some merit in exploring whether some things can be improved by small scope amendments versus considering, okay, is there a fundamental underlying theme that maybe that could capture it all? Because if I hear everyone's comments a few minutes ago on IFRS 8, to me that would be like a narrow scope amendment. And everybody's on the table, we need to get this, but and if you look at many wishes from investors, and Eumedion, the organization I work for, sends out a letter every year with requests for how to improve corporate reporting. And many of those could be addressed by narrow scope improvements without fundamental overhaul, with low risk in execution and expedient time to market. And so I'd like to make a case for a low risk continuous improvement and see if you can solve it simple instead of solve it fundamental. And if you cannot solve it simple, yes, of course you need to do it fundamental. But it's maybe merit in making that first consideration first. And that actually addresses, do we deliver at the right pace? I think the challenge for the ISB is to increase the pace without, of course, losing sight of due process. But I think there's how many years are we discussing insurance? I think it's just been, I mean, 2 decades. It's a problem, and I think the ISB is aware of that. But maybe narrow scope amendments is a way to address that as well. Barbara, please.
Just quickly, I wanted to highlight also what Martin said, because one of the changes we made was the IS7 change for the reconciliation of financing liabilities, which I wouldn't consider to be a huge project, but it was exactly, hopefully, responding to what investors have asked for. So I guess maybe we need to be clear on what a narrow scope amendment is, but that is, there are some things that hopefully we can do that would help investors that aren't full-on projects.
I wonder as well whether there's sort of merit in thinking about a slightly different process as well, because what we tend to do is either big projects like, you know, leases or insurance contracts or something, or we do very narrow scope amendments focused on one specific issue, or we also have the thing called annual improvements, which is the sort of really small stuff which is batched up for convenience. But what we don't have is projects that cover a few, let's say, disclosure issues but sprinkled across various standards. That probably wouldn't really fit into an annual improvements type of project. And if we tackled them, we might do them, at the moment, we might do them one by one, but maybe we should think about whether we could batch some of those up into a single project.
Last comment from Jacques.
I would simply agree with what Martin said about improving some existing standard with some small practical detail. I think IS7 disclosure is a good example of what ISB should deliver. It helps us. You don't change a lot of concepts. It's not very costly for companies, I really think, and it helps a lot. I mean, IFRS 8 could be one of the fields where we could use similar improvements. I think also when you look back to all the debates about performance reporting, I was part of the group that with the ISB worked on this performance reporting during 7 years, all the concepts in mind, we delivered nothing. I mean,
So at least I think that in the concept framework exposure draft, I see some reasonable practical answer to that. I think this is an improvement. We stop discussion about theological questions without delivering any real answers to users. And that's real work, that's a way we want to do. And I think some of the real latest standards are going in the right direction by doing this way.
Great.
Peter, last. Large projects are important also when they are processed. When you do this outreach activities to investors, actually I'm educated that way. The revenue standard has educated me a lot. The leasing standard has educated me a lot. So I don't think it's necessary to reach to analysts just when you issue a standard. It's also the process that I think is important. These outreach activities that you have, I think, is actually very welcome among analysts.
April, is anything else you need from us?
No, I think that's very full discussion. Thank you.
Wonderful.
Can I just put in one request?
Yeah.
For those of you who are still planning to respond to the survey, it would be really helpful if you give us as much reasoning as possible for your preferences. So I mean, sort of level of debate we've had around the table has been very good, and I think if we can have sort of similar detail and responses, that would be really helpful to us.
Because we are trying to move towards addressing actual problems. The evidence-based approach we're taking, I think, will help us do what you're suggesting, which is focus on where there's real issues to solve rather than starting with a blank sheet of paper. But to Peter's point, the more we understand what exactly it is that you think is the shortfall in the current accounting, the better equipped we are to scope things, to focus on those key points.
Okay. Well, that's all.
Yeah.
Thank you, April.
Thank you.